Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting again live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, otherwise known as UFO and Paranormal Central. We've got a great solstice evening show for you tonight. What better person to bring on the air but Michal Ledwith with What the Bleep, and I thought these Christmas holidays, I just couldn't think of a better person to come on the show. So, Michal, are you with us?
Absolutely. I'm here, James. How are you doing down there?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, you're bringing back all the great memories of my visit there, my second visit last summer.
Yes.
And all the wonderful things we experienced thanks to you.
Oh, you'll have to do it again.
I look forward to it very much.
You know, there's a lot has transpired since then. I mean, you've been just pretty much all over the globe doing lectures and workshops. And,
yes,
and
I'm like the piece of butter. I'm getting spread thin on the toast.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. I mean, you...
Good for the cholesterol, but not much else.
Yeah. You've got your book out now. You've got the Orbs book out.
Yeah, the book came out, James, on the 7th of November, and we were up in New York with Simon & Schuster,
mm-hmm.
and Beyond Words, of course, are the partners in it, and we had a very nice launch up there at that time, and I was able to visit the headquarters of that great publishing company, which is quite an experience.
Great.
We spent a lovely morning there with Judith Kerr of the division that the book came out with, Atria.
Yeah, you're also in Hope and Randy's movie, The Orbs of Veil is Lifting. We're both in that movie.
Yes, both of us. I have the great honor to be featuring side by side with you, James. But of course, I just to kiss the ground in front of you.
Oh, I think the honor was all mine there. Now, do you have a DVD you're putting out as well on Orbs?
Yes, I have a DVD coming out. I've just looked at an email just about 10 minutes before we came on about the editor of the thing. But it's within a couple of weeks that it's going to be finished. So I hope by the end of January, because I'm speaking at the International New Age Book Fair in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
At 26th, 28th of January, and I'm certainly hoping that it's going to be available for then.
Great.
And, you know, a lot of people, and I know you're not among these people, but a lot of people have said to me, you know, you can't say these things you're saying about orbs, because I'm maintaining, like as you do, that, you know, the orbs are telling us something really fundamental about the nature of the universe in which we live, the beings in it, how we interact with them, and how we create our own reality. And I think, you know, to just take wonderful pictures of orbs, someone very kindly said to me in New York that I have the largest collection of orb pictures in the world, namely about 150,000 at this time.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm not interested in building up a wonderful photographic family album of orb pictures, because I think that the discovery of this phenomenon is one of those great epoch-making happenings that occur now and again in the history of the human race, like discovering the Earth was round or that we're not at the center of the solar system or the quantum theory or whatever, that gives us a great insight into where we actually are in the physical universe and what the heck we're supposed to be doing here. And I'm so delighted that you are bringing out so much material. I mean, I am absolutely delighted to see the work you've produced in the last year in the books and in the DVD to try to get this message out there to people at large. So I think, you know, that not drawing the implication of what the orbs are telling us would be somewhat like the physicians who, when the microscope was invented, you know, quite a while back, they saw chromosomes, though it took them 3 weeks of looking at them before they saw them, just like Columbus's ships back in that famous story years ago, which we quoted in What the Bleep.
Yeah.
It took them 3 weeks to see the chromosomes in the blood cells that they were actually staring at for three solid weeks. But, you know, to not draw the implications of what the orbs are telling us would be like the physicians taking pictures of cells and viruses and bacteria, whatever, and never drawing the implications of it for human health and well-being.
Mm-hmm. Here we've been taking some just incredible orb pictures down in the basement, actually where I'm broadcasting from right now.
Oh, wonderful.
And, you know, that eliminates, we take one picture, there's nothing there. The next picture, it's full of orbs. And that eliminates any water spot on the camera, also dust. It's in the basement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's no dust flying around. There's actually nobody been down in here. And, you know, it pretty much eliminates everything else other than the obvious, which is that they are these light spheres, and they're going halfway in and out of these thick cement walls, and we see them going through metal beams.
Well, yeah.
And things of that nature. And how do you get a dust particle to go through a beam?
Oh, should I know? You know, there are a host of false orb pictures out there, but they're all due to what I call lens flare, basically, you know, pointing
mm-hmm.
your camera towards a bright light that ricochets down the barrel of the lens. But, you know, dust particles and pollen and all that, that's for the birds.
Yeah. I've heard every story you can imagine, and I just tell people, look, you haven't done the research, and until you do, you can't make an intelligent statement.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you.
One of the things I really wanted to talk about tonight, actually, my sister's over watching your DVD right now.
Bless her soul.
With Jesus. And it's quite an eye-opening DVD, and it's something I've always felt, you know, just within my soul, that we haven't quite been told the real story of Jesus and who he really was.
Oh, you can say that again. You can absolutely say that again, yeah.
Yeah, your research shows a whole different story, and it's a very unifying story that unifies all the cultures, it seems, in his travels, and he both learned and taught in almost every culture on the earth at that time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anything in that double DVD you refer to, how Jesus became the Christ,
mm-hmm.
you know, the one thing that puzzled me, James, which I know it puzzled also you, was I was a professor of theology for a very long time, more time than I care to admit. And I was an advisor to the Pope on the International Theological Commission for a grand total of 17 years when the present Pope was the head of our commission
uh-huh.
for 16 of those 17 years. But, you know, I, in other words, what I'm saying is I'm not sort of coming in off the sidewalk to this afresh. I've spent a lifetime researching it.
Uh-huh.
And the one thing that really puzzled me, James, was that I look at the New Testament, the four Gospels that tell us of the life of Jesus according to contemporary Christianity, and I find, you know, that we hear about him for a few days at the beginning of his life. We hear about him again when he's 12, for 3 days exactly, when he's in the temple. And then we're told he went down to Nazareth, that's with Jesus's parents, Mary and Joseph, and was subject to them, advanced in wisdom and age and grace before God and men, as the Gospel of St. Luke says. Now, after that initiation of 18 years, which is longer than the rest of his entire life, lo and behold, he comes out of that at the age of 30, and he starts to heal the sick, walk on water, raise the dead, etc. Now, I said, you know, if he really was down in Nazareth doing that, we should all take up carpentry straight away. Because obviously it's the initiation to marvelous things. But of course the truth of the matter is he wasn't there. He was doing something much more wonderful. And I think the Jesus that emerges from all of this is a far, far more wonderful being than even the most ardent devotees of his who claim they're following him, you know, within the confines of the conventional traditions could ever envisage. Far, far more magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Now you pretty much tracked his progression there, and it seems that he went through Tibet and India and through a lot of the Egyptian
yes,
mystery
schools. I think the conviction in popular Christianity, at least as I was brought up in it, and of course who is more traditional and mainline Christianity than me, was that they spent 2 years in Egypt fleeing the persecution of King Herod the Great. I mean, Herod the Great, as you know, was an absolute tyrant. He killed his best friend. He arrested 3,000 of the leading citizens of Judea when he was on his own deathbed because he felt he wouldn't be mourned when he died, and he was going to make sure, blooming well, that there would be mourning when he died because they were to be executed when he drew his last breath. Fortunately, that was countermanded, but he killed his favorite wife. He had many wives, of course. He killed his favorite wife, who was the last princess of the Hasmonean dynasty, to which Mary Magdalene also belonged. She was a princess of the Hasmonean dynasty as well. And can you imagine the dynamite of a combination between herself, the Hasmonean dynasty descending from Judas Maccabeus, who freed Judea from the Greek domination after the empire of Alexander the Great, and Jesus, who was, of course, direct descendant of the Davidic line. So you, the two great royal lines of Judea joined together in this couple.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamite. And, you know, it's no wonder Herod wanted to exterminate them all. But he killed her. He killed her two sons. He killed his best friend. And he killed 300 leading generals in the Judean army. I mean, the man was a monster.
Sounds very very much so. It seems there's so much misinformation. I know now, you know, a lot of people are alluding to the fact that when the church was passed down, it was supposed to go to Mary, and I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, I don't know. I don't really know where the truth in that matter lies, but I think, you know, what is definitely, I believe in just sticking with the facts. I don't like, and I know you're at one with me on this, because
mm-hmm.
I've always greatly respected your views and the pains that you take to be objective and certain. I'm like that too. Now, all I know is that, you know, what we have now is certainly not what Jesus envisaged after he departed this plane. And, you know, I don't know who he handed it to. If I look at some of the Coptic Gospels, for instance, that were discovered in Egypt in 1945, in December 45, you know, Mary Magdalene is definitely under any standard of commitment, is definitely in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the definition of apostle is aposteline, the old Greek word, which means to bear witness, and was basically those who bore witness to the resurrection. Well, who, even in the four Gospels of the New Testament, who was the first person to see Jesus after the Passion? Mary Magdalene.
Mm-hmm.
So even on the terms of the four Gospels of all the Christian churches today, which I was horrified to find when I spoke in Cape Town a few years ago at the Conference for the Parliament of World Religions,
mm-hmm.
I was horrified to discover there's over 20,000 Christian churches, denominations, and congregations at the moment in good standing in the world. I'm not easily shocked, but I was very, very shocked that day. So, you know, they all say that an apostle is a primary witness to the resurrection, but even on the terms of their own sacred writings, Mary Magdalene definitely comes out on top. She was the first to see Jesus, and some of the other apostles greatly resented the fact.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that they couldn't have kept the feminine side together there and going right along with the masculine and kept it balanced.
Right.
I know the Da Vinci Code, I know there's a lot of errors in that, but it alluded to Mary as actually being the Holy Grail, and that was where the true teachings were supposed to be passed down. And what's interesting is genetics actually passed with the woman.
Yes, the Jewish tradition always reckons descent through the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Very wise.
Yeah, it's when you think about it, it does make sense. But you know, we keep going over these patriarchal programs, and we forget the loving, nurturing, feminine aspect.
Yes.
What do you think? I was you know, telling people, you know, if Jesus came back today, what do you think would happen?
Well, the first thing is that they would try to crucify him in, or whatever equivalent there exists today,
mm-hmm.
for that. That definitely would be the first thing, because he'd be like he was when he was in Judea and Galilee 2,000 years ago. He'd be regarded as a blasphemer. I mean, one of the main things that they tried to stone him to death for, and he had to walk through them by his own power, was when he said, oh, you know, you're all gods.
Uh-huh.
Why is this so alarming to you people? Why, you're all gods. I mean, why? And they tried to stone him to death for blasphemy. And he said, why are you accusing me of blasphemy? It's in your own blooming scriptures. In Psalm 82, it says you are all gods. And, you know, the following verses, and you're all going to die like men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad truth. You know, that second half of the phrase is never quoted. Mm-hmm. But that's the sad thing. We are all gods, but unfortunately, you know, we were never meant to live the way we're living now. You know, at the mercy of every virus and microbe that comes our way, buffeted around by more powerful organizations and people than we are, you know, sort of taking the best of a bad lot and hoping, you know, for not too much pain at the end. This is not the way the human race was ever meant to live. And unfortunately, the trouble is that we fear nothing greater than the power we have. Mm-hmm. We want to be taken care of. We want the great parent in the skies to replace the parent we had if we were fortunate enough to have good parents, which a lot of us were. We want that great parent to be up there, to be assuring us that, you know, just all you need to do is place your trust in Christ Jesus or the Buddha or Muhammad or whatever your franchise is, and all will be well. And by the time you find out it's not all well, of course, it's too late. And as I've said countless times, it's back to the diapers.
Yeah, I mean, there's even UFO franchises now, you know, where...
I'm sure. You must meet a lot of that.
Yeah, I do. It's amazing. I said, what? They go, yeah, I'm the official representative and franchise holder, you know? And I just said, okay, I didn't know God was selling franchises, but sign me up.
Well, anyway, that, you know, the commissions vary, but the franchises are certainly there.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be a systematic program that's been going on, you know, even through the Dark Ages, but to separate, you know, the Creator from creation and from man, and to put it off in the ether somewhere and be the go-between and, you know, collect for your services.
Right, exactly, yes. Those who serve the gospel should live by the gospel. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you reach the stage of trying to keep your own control and power, and you say that it's for everyone else's good, I mean, and then you're getting over the line here.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not why we were here. I mean, the people who are supposed to be in charge of our eternal destiny seem to be sort of getting in the way of it rather than than forwarding. And that's worrying.
Exactly. You know, in the meditations I've been getting in my contact with some of these extremely spiritually advanced off-worlders, they've been talking about the Earth, and they said the Earth was designed as an Eden where people would evolve naturally and reach their highest potential and live in harmony with each other and the planet. And it was sidetracked, and it's soon to be rectified, like things, heaven is, you know, eventually coming back to Earth. And
right.
But they're saying we're definitely going to go through some major challenges and changes on every level.
Well,
in this process.
Yes, I think there's no doubt there are very tough times ahead, very, very close ahead. And that, you know, I couldn't agree more with what you say. This Earth was never meant to be the way we have it now, and we as human beings, you know, we were never meant to be living the lives we have now. But let me say this, and I think I said this in What the Bleep one time, whatever long ago, it seems like light years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
The Earth is exactly as we have decreed that it should be, because the consciousness of humanity has collapsed so far that all we can profoundly accept, which is what affects the quantum field, is negativity and lack, hostility. There's not enough to go around. I got to get it before the next guy gets it. This is the spirit that has dominated the world, and the world has unfolded exactly as we have decreed. I sometimes use an analogy. You know, if you take a great reservoir of water and you pipe in 1,000 pipes to it into 1,000 different households, before long the whole of the reservoir is going to be used up. So that's what I call the trance of scarcity. We as humans have hypnotized ourselves. No one's done it for us. We have done it ourselves because we want to be taken care of. And we've hypnotized ourselves into a trance state which says there's not enough to go around. It's dog eat dog and let me get the most before someone else snatches it. But, you know, the reservoir of water is not the best analogy. Look at the program here tonight that we're speaking on. Look at a television station. If one person tunes into this program tonight and 10 million tune into it tonight, does the signal become less? No, it doesn't matter if 1,000,000,000 more come in and tune into this program. It's still there in its fullness for everyone. It's not like water, which is a scarce resource and is used up if many plug into it. But the universe that you and I are, and all of our listeners tonight are in, is much more accurately represented as that television station or that radio station that broadcasts out the message. And it doesn't matter if 20,000 billion tune into it or just one. The result is the same. There's always enough to go around. The natural state of the universe is abundance. But we have decreed, because of our fears and our lack, that it's scarcity. And that is where it is. You know, the world should have been an Eden. But, you know, let's not blame anyone else. It's we, with our limited concepts, our guilt, our fear, our belief there's not enough to go around for everyone. We have produced the world we're in. No one else. And the only people that are going to change it is us.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've noticed, I always use the analogy of corn. I love to garden. And if you take one seed of corn, put it in the ground, you've got a stalk come up with probably two ears, and each ear has 500 kernels.
Absolutely.
And you put those 500 kernels in the ground, and you've got, you know, 1,000 ears of corn with you know, 500 kernels. And that's the nature, you know, the abundance of nature. And you look at that and you go, what's wrong with this picture? How did we get where we are? How can we have poverty and starvation? And
I know.
And when you see the true abundance of nature.
Absolutely. I mean, you've said this many times, and I've always been really thrilled when I hear you say it. You know, that the kind of world we're in is something that could be entirely different. And all we have to do is make that little switch.
Uh-huh.
You know, from what I call the trance of scarcity into a trance of abundance, because that is the true nature of the world, abundance.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's no limit to the quantum field. It's not that there's only so much there and it's going to be used up. It's never going to be used up. And all that we have to do is to never hold a negative thought. I mean, I know you yourself have it reiterated this over and over and over, and could never be reiterated enough. But all we've got to do is get out of negative thinking, get out of the trance that we're victims, and that we're not well, and that we have only a short life, and all this. We were never meant to be in any of those situations, unfortunately, but we have ourselves decreed that we should be so. And as Jesus said, in that famous quotation, we are all gods. And if we absolutely fundamentally believe that and fear it, because fear is a much more powerful agency of creation than love, because it possesses our very being and, you know, frightens us to the very core. So if we believe that in fear, obviously it's going to manifest. There's no alternative. It has to manifest. So if we want to blame anyone for the world, the world that we're in, you know, we blame ourselves, because we're the only ones that can change it to something vastly different, which we can do.
Yeah, I love that old saying that worry is a form of prayer. And so whatever you're worrying about, you're focusing on, and you're going to magnetize people and events to fulfill that fear.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, people sometimes used to ask. I mean, I, in my previous incarnation, in this present life, I had 10 yards of books on whether prayer was answered or not.
Uh-huh.
You know, and prayer is always answered 100% of the time. The only problem is that we don't realize what it is we're praying for. And if I, you know, if I am praying for, let's say, fabulous wealth or radiant health or whatever it may be, and, you know, I manage to squeeze 2 or 3 minutes of authentic, real conviction that fabulous wealth or radiant health will be mine, immediately I lapse back into my everyday life. You know, I go to the post office, I pick up my mail, and I have 17 bills there, the power company, the garbage company, you know, whatever. And I spend the rest of my day worrying about how I'm going to pay my debts. Well, now I've got 23 hours of focus on fabulous lack, and I have, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, maybe an hour of fabulous wealth. What's going to win? I mean, there's no mystery here.
Uh-huh. It does seem to definitely work. You know, the name of the show is called As You Wish. And when I crossed over my own near-death experience. That was the last thing that, the last message I got was as you wish, you know. So, and I would say this is like an as you wish universe.
It is. You know, I was very struck by your statement of that in the DVD you mentioned earlier, Hope and Randy Mead's DVD,
yes.
The Veil is Lifting. You know, I was very struck by that one statement that you made in it, which was, as you wish. Whatever it is you accept, well, then so be it, because you are the Lord of your own creation, and obviously no one has any right to quibble with it. It's as you wish.
Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of people don't realize God doesn't possess an ego to judge good or bad or right or wrong. It's just this incredible, blissful energy that just goes as you wish.
Yes, you know? As you wish, and all that God wants us to do, you know, and we have to stop, as I did in my DVD, The Hamburger Universe. You know, my God, the big problem with the human race is the way we picture God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, you know, it's the old caricature, which we're all familiar with, the old man in the beard with the clouds watching us through the telescope and giving us a destiny of happiness, which consists in sitting on a cloud for all eternity, or punishment. I'm not sure which is the bigger punishment. But anyway, you know, we've got to drop this thing, because God is much more. God, I mean, someone said to me one time, I was, you'll laugh at this, I was invited, I won't say which country, it was a country in Europe. I was invited to speak at a conference in this coming Easter, the European Atheist Conference. And I said, do you know who you're talking to? I said, I am the farthest possible thing you could imagine from an atheist. I said, I just don't believe that the label under which God is being marketed is true. But I said, you know, I'm absolutely convinced of the power of God in our lives, but that God is much more to be envisaged, not like a human being enlarged. I've often said that if elephants were thinking about God, they would think about God as an elephant, and if ants were thinking about God, they'd think about God as an ant, I'm sure. But we don't find it in the slightest bit odd that human beings think about God as a person. You know, an enlarged human being with some of the worst faults, I'm sure, taken out and all that. But basically, a man up there. I saw someone on television the other night saying, that man up there, referring to God. I mean, God is not a man, or indeed a woman up there, because these gender things don't belong to those planes. God is not like that. God is much more a verb, as I've often put it, than a noun. God is that pulsating energy that came from the creation down through all these levels to where we are on the very bottom, and is pulsating through everything, not just every person, but everything that exists. And all that God is asking as a creator is that you and I make the most of this opportunity we have down here to explore the unknown and the potentials of this created realm. That's what God is asking us to do.
You know, it's amazing. It seems if you really go to the depths of any religion and if you apply quantum physics, then you can understand what they're talking about. But if you don't have that foundation and you read, you can totally misinterpret all of it, and there are so many contradictions in there. But I think for me, having my own experience, having crossed over and having my own experience and going to the void and seeing all the other dimensions and planes, and then applying that after reading, you know, the various scriptures and things, I get these major ahas, which if I would have just read it just as a book for the word without that foundation, I could misinterpret that 100 different ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's very profound. You know, you remember that old story, James, of the three blind men that came up and bumped into an elephant?
Yes, yes.
You remember that one? You know, one, one held the tail and thought it was a branch of a tree, another mm-hmm. held the trunk and thought it was this and that, another held the leg. That's what it is. I mean, we're bordering on a major, major mystery. Not in the sense of a mystery is something that baffles the imagination. No, don't ask questions, that's a mystery, as I was told so often in my life. Maybe you were too. But in the sense that Albert Einstein expressed so profoundly well years ago, when he said, mystery is not absurdity, which is don't ask questions thing. Mystery is something that is so rich that the mind breaks down very quickly in trying to understand it. So we've got to approach it from different points of view that all add up together to make a whole. And if we understood the mystery of God and the mystery of creation and what we're meant to do while we're here, which is not hanging around here and trying to keep out of trouble until we get a reward hereafter, because that's not what's going to happen. And unfortunately, people who, you know, who put all their bets on that are misleading people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would certainly, you know, a lot of people said to me, like, given the position you were in, you were president of a university for 10 years, a very prestigious one, founded in 1518 originally. You were on the Vatican Theological Commission for 17 years. You know, why did you, turn aside from all that and, you know, turn out here? Well, I always felt that, you know, I would feel really bad if I died and found that things were totally different from the way I'd been led to believe. And I mean, I'm not trying to convert anyone. I'm not a missionary. If I'm trying to convey anything, it is to try to tell people to the best of my ability how I believe things are on the basis of very, very relentless research. And let them make up their own minds. I'm not trying to push this down their throat. But I would like every person on this earth, before they draw their last breath, if they're reckless enough to do that, and can't see what they could do if they only got out of their boxes, but if they did decide to go that route, I would like them at least to know what they're facing when they draw their last breath, because we don't ever die. And I don't want anyone on this earth, unless they choose to do so, to go into what we call the next world, which is what I think the orbs have given us such an insight into, without knowing what to expect. I mean, when we were in New York for the launch of my book, several people said to me at the end of my talk, you know, this is so hopeful. I mean, this gives us such enthusiasm and such strength, which was never there before, as to what, you know, we're really working in here and what I might expect if I die. And I realize I'm never really going to die. I'm actually going to be more alive when I die than I was when I'm here in the physical body, which has put blinkers on everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's what I would like to see happen, that people are not deluded, and our people are not dummied down to the lowest possible denominator in the interest of control and the bottom line. I would like people to at least have presented to them how things are as best we can express it, and let them make up their own minds. I don't want them to go, as Dylan Thomas said to his father when he was dying, don't go quietly into the dark night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. That's what I want people to do, to rage against the dying of the light, because it's not essential, it's not inevitable, and there's a much more glorious future awaiting for us all. And you know what? The destiny of this earth and the changes you talk about so rightly are dependent upon everyone taking the bull by the horns right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've definitely got to, you know, find that our own personal God connection in the days to come and listen to that guidance and act on it. And if we don't, we are going to be starting over in diapers, as you so rightly say.
Unfortunately so, yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
we've got to be wise as serpents, as Jesus said, and simple as doves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been quite a journey, this awakening healing process all of us are under. And I have a lot of people, I said, you know, I don't understand it. You know, the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and all dimensions throughout the multiverses is within. It's that spark waiting to be ignited. And people believe they're a body and a personality and try to die with the most toys, and they're so focused on their outer appearances and fear. And you go, boy, that's not happiness. You know, you try to get them past that program.
No. I mean, you know, if your whole life, and God knows, no one knows this better than me, because I was in it myself,
mm-hmm.
if my whole life is focused on, you know, avoiding sin, absolutely no holds barred morality. I'm absolutely not for that, because I think the only place that leads you is to disillusionment and corruption, uh-huh, and ultimately death. But if my whole focus has been on just making sure that I obey a certain number of rules, whether it's 10 in Christianity, 10 commandments, or whether it's 538 in Judaism or 721 in Islam, you know, if my whole focus has been on that and nothing more, I've missed the boat. This is not why I'm here. I'm here to make known the unknown, as my own teacher Ramta says. And if I have not made known the unknown, but I'm clinging to the very known and the very certain and the very secure, I've missed the adventure. And my life is going to be a crippled thing.
I always tell people that I said, look, I'm not your savior. I'm not your guru. I'm not infallible. And I said, I've experienced a lot of things, and I've gained a lot of wisdom from those experiences, and I'll probably make some more things that you would probably qualify as a mistake. But if you gain the wisdom from that experience and learn from it, it wasn't a mistake.
Absolutely. I mean, it's giving you a great gift of wisdom.
Yeah. How do you make the unknown known without jumping into it and seeing where it goes?
Well, you can't. I mean, you know, I'm so delighted you invited me. I'm very honored, by the way, that you invited me tonight, and I'm delighted that it's the time of year that it is. But, you know, what is a more wonderful time than Christmas? I mean, I think everybody realizes nowadays that Jesus was not actually born on the 25th of December, but what the heck?
Yeah.
You know, we're celebrating the fact. We're not into chronology here.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that it was the old Roman Mithraic celebration of the sun god. And, you know, I think it was in 53 B.C. when the Roman legions were unable to conquer that awful part of the world which we're still fighting in today, you know, Iraq.
Uh-huh.
When the Roman legions were unable to conquer the Parthian Mithraists, they adopted Mithra, the god, which is the unconquered sun, for themselves. And Yule, Y-U-L-E, became the official celebration of the Roman Empire.
Uh-huh.
And all the elements, you know, associated with that, which we know very well today, the holly, the ivy, the mistletoe, the yule log, the giving of gifts, the decorated evergreen tree, the magical being who brings gifts, the reindeer, all those come from Mithra. Which is, you know, several centuries before Jesus himself. But that's not to down it. I mean, I'm not a spoiled sport. I love Christmas, and I love celebrating it because we're celebrating something that's absolutely aligned with Jesus,
mm-hmm,
and what he came to tell us. But, you know, when people get into this mold, you know, we have the only truth and everyone else outside is wrong. Jesus does not belong to any religion.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't belong to any culture. He was a Christ and is a Christ today. That means that he has fulfilled the evolution of every human being. So there are no boundaries and territories and east and west and north and south in that. Jesus is a figure of the ages, the Son of God through ascension, not through incarnation. And, you know, if we grasp that fact, well, then we at least have laid the foundation and we're on our way. And I think, you know, calling to mind all of these matters at Christmas time is a wonderful time. And we're on the solstice here. We're at the middle of the solstice tonight. It's a wonderful time to talk about rebirth and renewal and a total change of attitudes because, as I said earlier in the program tonight, you know, we've got to take the bull by the horns. Nobody can do that for us. So if we take the bull by the horns and, you know, convince ourselves that we need to make a profound personal change as a result of the celebration of Easter, then we're on our way.
Uh-huh.
The trouble with our our year. These days, you know, there's so many celebrations. My God, you know, we're no longer finished with the 4th of July till we're into Memorial Day, and Halloween is starting in the end of August, and Halloween is not finished till we're starting with Christmas, and Christmas is over before Christmas Day happens. You know, I don't know what it is. Marketing has taken over the whole blooming scheme of things here. And, you know, in the past, in ancient times, there was a few high points in the year, festivals, when people came out and laid aside their cares and their drudgery and started to celebrate. But, you know, we're in a constant state of celebration now, and there's actually no real celebration behind it at all.
No, it keeps the bank accounts flowing. And
it's all about keeping the bank accounts going, and more power to that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we need a break.
Oh, yeah, we need some downward, inward time. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, and you actually brought it up already, as far as your research, when was Jesus born? Because, you know, they call him the Lion of Judea, and all of these other things seem to allude to different times than where they installed his birth, you might say.
Well, okay, that's you know, we don't have a vast amount of time. We have a long time tonight, but not a vast amount
no.
of time. But we're told, at least from the sources that are out there, and as you know, I believe in sticking to the evidence as far as I can. Okay. Jesus was born relatively close to the time King Herod died. And we know when that was. It was in about April or March of about 4 BC.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the date when Jesus' birth was officially dated, that comes from Dionysius Exiguus, a monk whom the Pope asked to recalculate the calendar in about 597, I think, AD. But I think he got it wrong because basically, don't need to get involved in that. I think the Emperor Augustus reigned under two names, Octavian first and then Augustus. And I think he forgot the time when he was reigning as Octavian.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, basically, I think the Christian calendar is about 4 years out. So Jesus was probably born in late 5 or early 4 B.C., which is a bit of a conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
And Herod died, you know, close to the Feast of Passover, according to Josephus. So if Jesus was born and Herod had to instigate the massacre of the innocents, the young children between 2 years and under,
mm-hmm.
then, obviously, the earliest Jesus could have been born would have been about 6 B.C., and probably later than that. So that's why I say, you know, if you're into these details, and, you know, it's not essential, because the main thing about Jesus is not when the heck he was born, mm-hmm. but what he was.
Exactly.
And what he tells you and I that we can be. But if you want to, you know, isolate the time when he was born, it was probably late 5, I would say, or early 4 B.C.,
Mm-hmm.
And he was crucified, or he went through his passion then, around probably 28 or 29 A.D.
Yeah, I've had some wonderful teachers, and they always referred to Jesus as the exemplar Christ, and the example of what we can all become, and what others have become in the past as well, which, you know, brings up the solar Christ, and they seem the same. These same dynamics that he went through, where he was born of a virgin and, you know, said he was the Son of Man, and then he said he's a messenger from God, and then he said, I'm the Son of God, and then he says, I am God, and these seem to all be a progression of spiritual evolution, which all of us can go through and eventually become one or reach that atonement, which I call at-one-ment, you know, with God, which was what his prayer was all about.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more with every syllable of what you said. I mean, the reason why Jesus came here, if we had a lot of time tonight, we could go into this in more detail. But you look at the picture of God that's in the Old Testament. I mean, don't draw me out on this, but, you know, if I put the list together of the way God is pictured, unfortunately, in those books, I mean, they're still there today. I'm not out on a limb here. You go into any hotel or motel room in the land, and those books are there in the bedside locker, thanks to the Gideons.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you can read this for yourself. But he's accused of the rape of virgins, of the massacre of innocent people, of killing mothers and children and so on. I mean, instead of being put up as God today, this person would be accused of war crimes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, give me a break here. You know, Jesus came to make a change in all of that. He came to make a new covenant. He came to show us that we are all God's. We have the spark of the divine life within us, that we're all children of God, heirs to the kingdom of heaven. And, you know, all our best efforts today have been to deny that. No, I want to be taken care of. You know, I don't want to acknowledge that I have all this power within me. The thing that frightens human beings most is not their misery and their suffering, but their power. They don't want to admit there's power, because if there's power, there's responsibility. And if I accept this responsibility, then every single iota that's in my life today, I know I brought it there. That's the depths of the dark night of the soul with a vengeance. But you know what? If I know that, it's also the day of my redemption, because I know that if I brought it there, I can change it all. And that's the big challenge, and that's what Jesus came to exemplify. That's why he was born. There were many great beings who conspired together to bring him into the world, to break the stranglehold of people's ways of thinking about God, and to blaze a trail that you and I and every person walking on this planet today and since then could follow. What did we do? We said, oh, no, you don't. Put him up there on a pedestal, burn incense, worship him, and be obedient to him. You know, worship and obedience are the two great factors that everyone asks for in respect to God. I say to you tonight, worship and obedience are the two death-dealing drugs that we take that will impede permanently our path into the evolution of greatness.
I agree 100%. You know, what I see a lot of the teachings in a lot of the fundamentalist religions, they push very hard the fear and guilt and unworthiness, and, you know, you're not even worthy to touch the hem of God or even take a peek at what the source is. And so these are all divisions. These divide people.
They divide and they disempower them.
You know, and if anything, you know, and it's anti-Christ consciousness.
It's anti-Christ. You know, you put your finger on it there.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy is that many people who are screaming and shouting about how faithfully they follow Jesus, they're actually proclaiming something that is against his message and his person.
Uh-huh.
That's very sad.
Yeah, I run into that quite a bit, and I'm sure you do too.
yes, indeed.
That old bumper sticker, you know, please God save me from your followers, you know.
You know, when I was a student many years ago,
mm-hmm.
I studied a philosophy of a great Austrian philosopher who lived in England, Ludwig Wittgenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Very famous, probably one of the greatest philosophers of the 20th century. And when he was coming near to dying, he said that he would agree to burn all his books if his students would promise never to publish anything interpreting his work. And it's the same with Jesus. I mean, the message that Jesus left is so magnificent and so empowering for every person on this planet, irrespective of gender, race, or creed.
Mm-hmm.
And look what we've turned it into.
It is sad. You know, I can go and sit down with the Tibetans, and I can sit down with the yogis, and I study with Tibetans and lamas and yogis, and I just wanted to see what everybody was doing out there, and I studied with the Native Americans and went through their ceremonies and sweat lodges, and I got a piece of all of it and looked very deeply into it, and basically my conclusion I came to was we all came from the same place, we're all going to return to the same place, and we all have different ways of describing it.
Yeah.
And different words.
Yeah.
For it, but...
Well, you know, when you asked me there earlier in the program tonight about my DVD, How Jesus Became a Christ.
Yes.
you know, what I discovered was that contrary to going down at the age of 12 or 13, I presume that incident in the temple was his bar mitzvah,
mm-hmm.
but contrary to going down to Nazareth for the next 18 years, he actually went to the east. He went down through present-day Iraq and Iran into Pakistan, up through Kashmir, and then eventually up into the hill country of Nepal and Tibet. You know, he was appalled at what he found in India, in the cities, for 6 years. And after that, he went up into the mountains. He met the really great masters who taught him how to heal at a touch, etc., etc., etc. And when he was 26, he came back into Egypt and Greece and then eventually the Holy Land to begin his ministry. You know, that was a journey of a great soul. And it really is the journey that you and I are called to accomplish, not obviously in Egypt, India, and Tibet, but we're asked to accomplish it here and now. That's why I wanted to do that DVD, because I wanted people to know what Jesus really did, which is far, far more magnificent than anything, you know, that we are supposed to have put before us today to accomplish.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if there are any listeners to this program who want to send me any questions, and obviously we have very little time tonight, but my website is called hamburgeruniverse.com. And please feel welcome to, you know, to write and ask me, and I'll try and clarify any questions that you may have, especially about orbs, because I think we started off about orbs tonight, which is one of the great facts that has come to light in, you know, the last 20, 25 years that tell us about the nature of the universe. So if you have any questions about orbs or about Jesus, especially at this time of Christmas, you can obviously refer them to James's website, which is very well known to you, or you can refer them to mine directly if you so want, because James and I are in, we're not in frequent touch, but we're on the same page. And
yeah.
we always reconcile our accounts at some stage.
You know, I always wonder if you took a camera back in time, you know, to, you know, Jesus on the mountain or to the Last Supper. I'll bet you those rooms and those hilltops were just wall-to-wall orbs, light spheres everywhere.
Oh, I'm sure they were. And, you know, it's the first time in human history, thanks to a very simple device, the digital camera,
mm-hmm.
that every man, woman, and child on this planet is able to have access to beings of other dimensions. And if we know that those are beings out there and they're separated only from us by a tiny degree of frequency, you know, what does that tell us about the destiny that's awaiting us? I mean, all of the fundamental beliefs, this is what I'm going into in the DVD that's about to appear called Orbs, Clues to a More Exciting Universe, because it is more exciting. You know, what does that tell us about where we are? What does it tell us about things like the soul, the spirit? What can I expect after death? More importantly, which the Western religions have almost nothing to say about, what happened before I came into this body in this life? You know, was I just created out of nothing by God, which is the standard explanation? Or was I there already? And are the circumstances of this present life tailor-made to enable me to address the issues I didn't own in the past one? I mean, all of our present upbringing is turning us totally away from addressing those issues. If I knew, for instance, when I came into this life, that the circumstances that I was born into, my parents, my brothers, my sisters, my social condition, my culture, my country, my economic situation, etc., 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 were all geared to enable me as a service to come to grips with the issues that were blocking me from the past, what a different experience of life I would have had, you would have had, everyone would have had, if we knew this blooming stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of bungling like blind, foolish, ignorant beings, like bulls in a china shop.
You know, it is really sad. I know when I had my first out-of-body experience, it scared the hell out of me. And, you know, if I was prepared for it and told about it, I would have had an awesome experience. But
sure.
It's the same thing when we realize we're more than a body and a personality. we can go off and jump, you know, into these other dimensions and experience them and have just an incredible life where we're not just bound to this physical experience. We can experience and get love and joy and guidance from all these other planes and dimensions out there that are waiting to embrace us.
Absolutely, and we just miss all the lessons, you know. Instead of, you know, when I run into a problem, instead of saying, you know, because we know from quantum physics that we can only perceive what we are.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody really gets my goat, you know, if I can't understand how this person is the way they are, what the heck are they thinking? That's a sure sign that I have this thing in me buried so deep I can't even see it.
Exactly.
I mean, if we could only realize that we can only see what we are, we're looking at a movie of ourselves in every interaction we have in life, what a quick journey we'd have through all the problems, barrier, and obstacle courses of this life into something much more worthwhile. I mean, we've accumulated all this baggage down the centuries. It's time to get rid of it and to get on with the real business and the joy and transcendence.
Uh-huh. I always tell people that the universe is only as big as the mind that can perceive it. And
right.
We got to get a neural net. You know, we're out of time. I've got to sign off now. I can't thank you again for coming on the show. I'd love to have you on again real soon. I know we've just touched the
iceberg. Surface, but James, I'm very honored that you invited me around Christmas, a wonderful time for us all to celebrate what's really important about you and me and Jesus the Christ.
Oh, thank you so much. I couldn't think of a better guest to have on during these times.
Thank you.
And we'll do it again real soon.
I hope so. Thanks so much.
All right, have a great evening.
You too, and Merry Christmas to everyone.
All right. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great Christmas, and I'll see you in the dream time.